Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Thank you for starting awesome August with Radio Sai. It's 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 1st of August 2013 and you are tuned to Asia Stream on Radio Sai. We are coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios in Prashanthi Nilayam, India. Current weather conditions in the abode of Supreme Peace continue to be easy breezy with moderate to strong winds, occasional showers like the one we just had maybe 35 minutes ago, minimum temperature 23, maximum 32 degrees Celsius. General outlook for the day, overcast skies most of the time. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, your all-day live connection to Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I'd like to begin by offering myself at the lotus feet of the Lord of the Universe, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, who is the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Here's what's making news in Prashanthi Nilayam, the epicenter of all things true, auspicious and beautiful. Believe it or not, the Guru Purnima celebrations are continuing every single day in Prashanthi Nilayam and now they're blending into Ramadan prayers. We have large contingents of devotees from so many parts of the world who are visiting the ashram and every group is ready with a loving presentation for the Lord. So, in next week's Morning Glory, I'll bring you some of those highlights from the many presentations that we are enjoying every day here in Prashanthi since July 18th. The Guru Purnima festival has turned into a fortnight-long festival of Guru Purnima celebrations with music of the spheres for treating our souls. And might I add, delicious prasadam at the end for treating our taste buds. Mandir is full of happy, celebratory energy every single day. Here's what's coming up on Morning Glory today. We will continue with part two of the discussion with two experts from the Sai University on the role that humanity is playing in bringing natural disaster after disaster upon ourselves. On Morning Glory, we are attempting to understand the phenomena of natural calamities from economic, demographic, geological, physical, emotional and spiritual perspectives. Last week, Professor Gangadhar Shastri and Dr. Deepak Anand explored man's relationship with society, nature and the Creator. Today, they take this discussion a step further and remind us how individually and collectively we are the architects of our destiny. We possess the power to define our relationship with the planet that nurtures and sustains us. This discussion, dear listeners, is a must-listen for everyone who believes in the human values of love, peace and non-violence. Our Mother Earth is a living, breathing, animate entity. And unless we mend our ways and treat her with respect, love and tenderness, she has every right to strike back at us. How would the avatar like us to go about redeeming our thoughtless exploitation of nature? The experts today will walk us step by step on how we can prevent the situation from spiraling out of control. So the first item on Morning Glory is the concluding part of this conversation with two experts from the Sai University, namely Professor R. Gangadhar Shastri, Joint Director, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus and Professor of Political Science there. And Dr. Deepak Anand, Assistant Professor, Department of Management Studies, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus. Thereafter, I will bring you our feature presentation, a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Under the spotlight today is Mr. Pratim Banerjee. Right now, let's get on with our expert panel. Over now to Professor Gangadhar Shastri and Dr. Anand as they decode the message of the Lord on the issue of natural calamities.
And everything is so sacred.
It is so
everything is sacred.
You become so sacred. And that, you know, these feelings are the ones which give you confidence, strength, vitality, vibrancy. All kinds of good qualities come to you because you are spiritually so charged. Don't be a wicked person. When you are a wicked person, the whole nature, you know, it doesn't want to even have anything to do with you. It wants to just get rid of you. That should not be the case. You are here. Your presence should be something like a pleasant presence for everything, even birds, beasts, everybody should enjoy your presence and you also enjoy it. That is how it should happen. That is one thing. Second thing, Swami once was talking about, he used to distribute silk saris to everybody during festival time, especially women, silk saris, beautiful saris he was giving. And he used to get all the saris and identify the sari for the proper woman, which sari suits a woman. He was paying so much of attention. He once showed me how he was doing and he said, I do it with perfection. Whatever I do, perfection. Why, you know, I want everybody also to follow this. And then he was arranging everything and suddenly some teachers came and then Swami asked all of us. He came out to spend some time with us. And his way of talking, interacting with people was the first question. With the first question, kya samachar?
What's the news?
What are the news? That means he was in a mood to give us wisdom. So we immediately bring a chair, put it there and say, Bhagwan, kindly be seated and give us wisdom. So he sat there and looked at all of us. We were only half a dozen teachers were there. No one was there. And then immediately he asked us, see, I have a question for you, he said. Yes, Swami. Now, why is it that the silk saris are becoming very, very, very expensive? A very simple question straight away. Why silk saris are becoming expensive in the modern times? Then we said, we know when there was a question, it's going to be a tough time for us. So it's better for us to keep quiet. So we all kept quiet. And Swami said, you are all professors, you must answer. Even then we kept quiet. Then Swami looked at a teacher who was teaching economics. And said, you are an economics man, come and answer this question. And he was also reluctant. Swami said, come on, say something. Then he came out with the basic fundamental economic principle.
Supply.
So the demand is very high.
Yeah.
And the supply is less. The prices are shooting up. Then he said, oh, you know more than me. Then the man said, sorry Swami, pardon me. This is what we teach. Then Swami said a wonderful thing. This actually is the one. The spiritual significance of why prices shoot up is spiritual, not economic. Or you can call it spiritual economics. Swami said, there is a logic involved in what is happening in this entire universe. It's spiritual logic, which you don't see because you don't apply your spiritual mind. If you apply your spiritual mind, you will find when all human beings run after something, automatically its price is going to shoot up. When all human beings stop running after it, however valuable it is, its value will crash down immediately. He gave an example. The silk saris you run after, you want to have at any cost, because your desire inside to have that is so intense, it shoots up its price.
Oh, so basically, it's
the intensity of your desire.
This is a deeper level.
The deeper level, the
demand
intensity of your desire.
Is a manifestation of a desire, deep desire.
That's all. You want to buy it at any cost, and that fellow will just say, 10,000, you are ready to buy. He says 15,000, because you want it, you will pay 15,000. The intensity of your desire. Okay, you go there, and he says 15,000, and my desire dies. Let me kill my desire. And the shopwala says, I'll give you free. I don't want it. The shopwala says, Swami said, I materialize a lot of things, including gold things, and give you. Those are so valuable to you because those are gold. Maybe because I am giving you, that is also there. But those are all gold things. You value them so high, and you are very, very happy about it. But the same gold thing has no value for me because I throw it away just like that. I don't give any value. Tomorrow you bring me a diamond and give it to me. I don't have any desire for it. I don't want it. So a sannyasi has no value for anything in this entire world. And your economics all crashes one shot when you kill your desires. I don't want. You give me an AC room. I don't want it. I'm very happy on the road. What will you do?
Very true, very true. In fact, Swami has lived by such example.
He lived such a simple life
all the time.
Why don't we do it?
Mind.
Yeah, why don't we understand it? He was living a very simple life to tell us. Even today in ashram, people live in only one room. highly accomplished people in the world, in the society, after their retirement or whatever it is, they would like to come and settle here. And when they settle, very rich people.
And people of great success in the outside world.
Great success.
Eminent people. And they all live such modest, simple lives
simple
in our ashram.
Simple living and high thinking.
What is the reason you say?
Our vice chancellors, including members of the Central Trust, most people don't realize.
Why is that happening in Prashanta Nilayam or Ramana Maharshi Ashram or for that matter Aurobindo Ashram, wherever they go, they lead a simple life with simple things and they are highly successful people, brilliant people who accomplished everything in the world. When they are doing it, why don't you think you can also do?
Yes, Dr. Anand, what do you think about it?
You're asking a youngster. I think the orientation, you know, that changes once we realize, as I was telling, if you realize the real purpose of our lives, that we have to, like Alexander Napoleon and all the great kings, you know, when they went away from this world, they could not even take a handful of dust. Right, so if one realizes the real purpose of why we are born, what's the goal of our lives, I think the orientation absolutely changes. But what comes in the middle of us, you know, what we think we are, and the reality of our lives, and the real goal of our life, which is a spiritual realization, is this mind. The mind is necessary for us to live in this world. Without the mind, we cannot live. Without eyes, ears, and tongue, it is difficult to exist. But the mind has also the habit of dividing and desiring everything. The love that God gives in the beginning of time, this mind divides into so many small pieces. It goes into people, it goes into gadgets, it goes into power, money, positions, relations. You know that, you know, it divides into so many small fragments and pieces that doesn't remain that original love anymore. And the whole purpose of a spiritual life, when people, you know, we talked about great people of authority, position, money, power, who have come to Bhagwan and staying such simple lives in a single room without any conveniences, but they're very happy. In fact, now when you ask them, sir, are you happy? They would say, we have not been happier ever before. When we were in great positions, we were always feeling as if, you know, that period was a life in hell, and coming to Bhagwan, leading a simple life of high thinking is really the heaven that we are living in now. The problem is, sister, we don't think about the real purpose of our lives, and we borrow our desires from everywhere, from our friends.
Or we borrow this picture of what a perfect life should look like,
right,
from the media, from some man-made social norms. You know, like for example, the joke is if you live in North America, you have to have a cookie-cutter home in the suburbs,
yes,
couple of kids, a
right,
big dog, a
right,
van, and another SUV. So these are sort of standard parameters,
right,
we have set for ourselves, and we're always trying to compete and compare ourselves to others.
Right. But that is the problem.
We get caught up in that web
actually,
that we create for ourselves.
You have to orient your mind to lead a simple life. You should tell your mind all the time, because this mind is going to drag you, especially in the modern conditions prevailing in the society. Swami was asking us to control your mind. Tell your mind. Let it not drag you onto the wrong track. I'll give one example. Swami was very particular that you get a salary which is good for your normal living. Don't get think of a very huge salary, for one reason, that when so much of money is available to you, there is a possibility of a person going mad. So much money is available to you. Today, the software engineers in the world with very huge salaries, and at a young age, they don't know what to do with that money.
And for that matter, celebrities, because
yes,
all of a sudden, especially young celebrities, many of them, we have so many case studies where they've come into millions and millions of dollars very quickly, and very quickly hit the end of the road and ended up in rehab.
Right.
So
right,
they need treatment for addiction to drugs and
all the other
substance
problems,
abuse, and everything else that comes in his trail. So when we're talking about the ability of the mind to determine what is right and wrong, I'm just thinking of that example that Baba gives. We all think, oh, I'm so caught up in the world. I have to keep up my EMI payments. I have to keep up with all these luxuries I have created in my life. He says it's like a monkey who's got a fistful of peanuts mm-hmm. and his hand is stuck in a pot.
That's
that
right.
Keeps trying to pull his hand out, mm. but because he's the hand is in the form of a fist,
yeah.
he's not able to extract it. Now, if the monkey was to let go of the peanuts, his hand would slide out very easily. Dr. Anand, you're a man of economics.
Mm-hmm.
Baba has spoken of a blueprint for humanity. He has given us a path, and it's neither a path of self-indulgence nor a path of self-deprivation. He gave us a code or a card, COD, and he said if you follow this in certain parameters of your life and live very balanced lives, there's going to be a lot more harmony.
Harmony, yes, absolutely.
Would you like to elaborate on it?
Oh, very much. In fact, I would like to start with one particular instance when one of the top CEOs of an organization came and addressed the MBA boys. And after the, when he heard the boys chant the Vedas and he heard about, you know, the integral system of education where they chant the Vedas, they have go for spiritual practices, morning they have got Omkaram and Suprabhatam, then they... So when he heard about this whole system, he was slightly confused. And he said, I would like to ask you boys one particular question. Is Swami in this institution preparing you to become great sages or is he preparing you to become CEOs? What? So one of the boys raised his hand and said, could I, sir, please have the opportunity of answering your question? And he said, sir, in this integral system of education, Swami is training us to become CEOs in the world, but sages from inside.
Good one.
There has to be a harmony.
Yeah.
We talked about mind going in different directions.
Yeah, like Plato's philosopher king. Yeah.
Right. So it is very difficult to. And then another instance which comes to my mind here is in Kodaikanal, where Swami had given a discourse, and in that discourse Swami had mentioned on three occasions, master the mind, become a mastermind. Master the mind, become a mastermind. So I was listening to Bhagwan, and then I wondered, what's the real meaning of this particular sentence? You know, how do you really master the mind? He is not giving the solutions. He is only putting up a question, master the mind. But how to master the mind? So when Swami came inside, all the VIPs were there. Now it's a very formal environment because all the VIPs have been called upon, and we students, you know, keep a little backseat in those circumstances, not taking any spiritual risk. So then after Swami discussed with some VIPs, I raised my hand. I said, Swami, can I ask one question? And then Swami looked at me a little with a focused attention. Why are you opening your mouth at the wrong time? I give you so many chances since morning to evening. Why in presence of all the elders? But the question was very, very much in my heart. I wanted an answer. I thought I'll not take another chance. So I said, Swami, you mentioned about master the mind, become a mastermind. What is the easiest way for man to master the mind and become mastermind? And Swami smiled and said, good question. And then he said, the easiest way to master the mind and become mastermind is to love God more and more. And then he paused for a while and then again looked back at me and said, and the best way to love God is to love all and serve all. Again.
Makes it sound so simplistic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because when your mind is focused upon God, then your other desires, Swami says, will automatically fall away. They will not be there.
Because your priorities undergo such a
huge turn.
Yeah.
And that is how Swami trains the mind. We talked about, you know, the animals of the forest, how they follow discipline and rules. In fact, instance which is very interesting, which came to my mind just now, was shared by Mr. Sanjay Sahani, the director of the Vrindavan campus of the institution. We were in Badrinath, you know, 2 months back in the holidays time. And we had satsang. So one day he was sharing that, you know, one of the persons who was privileged to walk behind Swami in the earlier times in Vrindavan, there was no hall, there was nothing, only trees were there, and there were also some mango trees in those trees in the campus. So one day as Swami was he was walking behind Bhagwan, Swami passed by a mango tree, and on the tree there were a bunch of monkeys there. And so Swami told this particular person, go to Rajmata's residence and bring some peanuts. So he quickly ran. He knew where the peanuts were in the kitchen. So he brought those peanuts and gave them to Bhagwan. Bhagwan put a fistful of peanuts on his palm, with an open palm, and looked at the monkeys and just indicated by his eyes for them to come and partake. And this particular individual was totally aghast, flabbergasted, totally amazed that all the monkeys formed a perfect queue in front of Bhagwan. They all came down one by one. They formed a perfect queue. You know, better than what the boys make in the mandir. And all of them came in line, took one peanut each. You just talked about, you know, the monkeys grabbing the peanuts. No, we have here, you know, the Parameshti who can control the prakriti of even the monkey mind which cannot be controlled.
I know.
And they all took one peanut, and after that, they went back and went back to the tree. So if there is somebody in this world, somebody, you know, who can control the nature, and here is an example, and that person said, I knew that Swami is God, but that day I had complete faith in Him and I surrendered to Him. Oh God, if somebody can control the monkey mind of human beings, it is only this avatar and nobody else.
And I'm sure those monkeys would have been highly offended if they heard us say that the mind is a monkey mind. Because they proved that monkeys can be so disciplined.
They would talk about human mind.
Yes, very true.
So now, talking about ceiling on desires. As I mentioned it to you now, Swami wanted these people not to have desires for lots and lots of money, which is likely to create problems. And it is evidenced recently in Bangalore when the software engineers began to earn very huge salaries. And suddenly, because of laying off jobs and all that, they were on roads almost with a lot of debts. Whatever things they acquired for EMI and all that, you can't pay and you have to sell for whatever price. You have to throw them away on the road and they are into deep trouble. So what happens, you know, if you begin to lead a simple life and love to lead a simple life and you are happy with that life, all the problems are solved.
Very true.
I was wondering when I was thinking 2-3 days back about my own teachers who taught me when I was in my school. My Sanskrit teacher, my Telugu teacher, my Hindi teacher, all those people in those days who were getting at the most 1,000 rupees or so. They were very happy with their wives, their children, and they aspired their children to be teachers in schools. Being a school teacher, he was not very much inclined to make his son an engineer or a doctor or something beyond his competence. Today the problem is, your desires are beyond your competence. Everybody is rushing. That is the reason why Bhagwan Baba said, it is parents to a very large extent who are actually poisoning the minds of the youngsters. So all the parents should stop thinking on those lines. Try to give them a good life. Make them good beings, not
high earners necessarily at any cost.
That's what we are doing. We send them to corporate schools today, where there is a lot of pressure put on them. They are not able to take that pressure. You should know whether that the child can take so much pressure or not.
Very true.
You are pressurizing him. It is like you have Puttaparthi, a small village. You pack Puttaparthi with a lack of cars.
God forbid, I hope that day never comes.
If you are going to pack it with so many vehicles,
yes, yeah.
So many buses, how the village is going to take it? It can't take. Just as an individual cannot take, a village also cannot take.
And imagine the level of pollution, the air quality that will deteriorate if such a thing were to happen ever. It does happen on big occasions like Baba's birthday, when we have so much of vehicular traffic, we can't wait for those people to go back so that our little paradise returns to normalcy.
But that was only a short while.
Yeah, that is only
Bhagwan
for like
Baba
a week.
Was managing it. But today, you know, the situation, what I am saying is, with having Bangalore, Madras, Delhi, all these cities in my mind. Literally, are you not killing the city?
Bangalore, like 30 years ago, was such a beautiful garden city. Today, it's a haphazard concrete jungle. That's what it is. Because of poor planning.
Not only poor planning.
And explosion of population, explosion of vehicles.
Desires.
Everybody wants to get a trim. A poor person wants to get a bicycle and then graduate to a two-wheeler, a motorcycle, a nano, a Maruti, and you just keep going upwards to more expensive foreign cars.
We are adding to our problems.
Exactly.
We are adding to not only our problems, we are adding problems
social
to the national
problems.
Level, social problems. Social problems are horrible. social, the society is just degenerating to such levels, you do not know whether your child is going to the school or not. And you don't know.
What the child is learning in the school apart from academics, because parents don't have time to see what their children are watching or what they have access to on computers. So the net outcome is that children are exposed to materials which is extremely inappropriate for their age, including watching cartoons as children, as young kids. Apparently, a North American child by the age of 5 is exposed to like several thousand murders, because even in cartoons and video games, there are gunshots and there's killing and there is bloodshed. And it's very hard for parents to pay attention to this aspect. So they feel, okay, TV is a good babysitter while I'm busy. Let the child watch a children's channel. Even children's channels are very dangerous.
That is the reason why now in the world, the mind is getting more and more criminal.
So it what is the solution to this current situation that we are already discussed and understood, that there is uninhibited feeding of the senses with material which is inappropriate, which only feeds our desires, and all of us are trying to live a life which we're not really ready for, which is not necessary. It is not based only on our needs, but it's also based on our greed and our desires. What did Baba provide as a solution to this?
There are two things which I can tell you. One is the educational system that is established by Swami.
And Baba said this, what he did, the hospitals, the education, the water, these are models that people were to replicate.
That's
he went ahead and created a perfect model, sustainable, to show how this can be done. But we're not finding too many takers for it outside of our institutions. People still want to go the other route and continue the greed-driven, because it's become edupreneur, right? Education has become a business now.
By itself.
But as I told you in the beginning, how long will you go like this? There will be a point when you have to come back to normal. You will crash. Let it crash. If these people want this kind of life, let them go and go and go. A day will come when they will crash and they will have to come back to this home.
That will be a very hard wake-up call.
You have to pay a price.
So we have
already that price.
We are already hitting the rock bottom.
Right. And many corporations, you know, which are doing extremely well,
yes,
right? And you know, regarded as, you know, the idols in the corporate world, have gone down the drain.
Yes.
But there are other examples, for which I would like to bring your attention to, that not that we are only bad examples in corporate life. Today,
true,
corporations have got a lot of power. In fact, you know, the American politics, the Indian politics, to a large extent, is also influenced by, you know, the lobbying by the corporate world. It is a fact that we all know about, right? So, but there are many examples. I talked about the, you know, Jamshedji's vision. He said the corporation does not exist to make profit from people. It exists only to serve people, to serve the community. That is the example. And I won't tell about these examples once again, because all of us work. All of us either are running an institution or are working an institution. And we all have to go back and evaluate what is the net impact of this organization's working in the environment, on the environmental impact. And if it is not correct, we have to correct it. That's a moral responsibility in our own enlightened self-interest. We are not doing anybody a favor by saving the world or contributing towards it. It is our duty, the fundamental duty.
We are helping ourselves.
And I would like to give, you know, some more examples. Recently, we were in the TVS Motor Company when we go for the industrial visit for the MBA boys. And Mr. Benu Srinivasan is very proud to show us, you know, the bird sanctuary, which exists in the very campus of TVS Motors, right? And they are very environmentally conscious. We look at the example of General Electric, right? Walmart. We look at, you know, the Fraser Vineyards. We look at Patagonia. All the leaders of these organizations, at that time when they took decisions to be environmentally conscious, even at a higher cost to the organization, people term them as, you know, that was inept. They call them, you know, impractical solutions. But these are the people who have stuck on to their values, understood that the whole organization is working in an environment which is given by the natural environment. And if we don't take care of the community, of society, of the environment, one day we are sowing seeds of self-destruction.
So, ecocentric leadership does work, although it may take long to pay dividends.
It may take long time. It may have a particular cause in the long run. And today, if you see people, the customers, there are green funds in America. That means these funds only invest in those companies
Which
are...
ethical funds, yes.
Yeah, ethical funds, which invest only in good companies. Today, people are so much conscious that being environmentally conscious, being eco-centric, having eco-centric leadership in the organizations is a very profitable venture. Because today, people have arisen to the reality that we have to support the cause of the sustenance of the ecology at some time or the other. We have
what
to
about
do
at a personal level, at an individual, family level, what are some of the parameters that Baba gave us?
I think one of the most important parameters is that we should not waste. We Swami says, for anything that your mind says wants it, please step back one step and ask yourself one particular question. And the question is, do I really need it or not? Really in big capitals, really. Right? We may have 100 pairs of clothes. We go to the market, buy one more pair. Did we ask ourselves, do I really need it? I have got a small car, right? But when my friend buys a bigger car, the joy I derive from my car goes for a toss, you know? And then I say, oh God, he bought a better car. You know, I'm so jealous now. As I was telling, there's no cure for jealousy. It's an cumulative, geometric progression.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask myself, do I really need to sell my car and buy a bigger car now? Everybody must question. Because wherever there's a big building, there's another pit somewhere besides that. Nothing comes free of cost.
We are talking about education, and Swami said, what is education? And when he was addressing, he said, you are all vidyardhis. What is the meaning of the term vidyardhi? The person who is coming to seek education, vidya
is learning.
Vidya is the one for which you are there. And you take care of only education. You get educated and derive the benefit out of education. If you are here to have education and your mind is getting polluted, then what is the purpose of education then? In one context, Swami made an observation and said, today the world is actually facing all problems because of educated people than illiterate people.
So-called educated.
Because the illiterate people, they are not harming anybody. They are taking care of themselves.
Whereas we have learned clever ways to harm others for self-serving purposes.
If the educated people are not really understanding the meaning of education, where do you want to look to for solace?
Mm.
Your education should give you fantastic qualities. A quality like, for example, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. Education is supposed to confer humility. Education is supposed to confer some sense of understanding, sense of sacrifice, sense of satisfaction, sense of commitment. Where are all these qualities then?
So, as an individual, if I want to take a moral responsibility for the catastrophes that are happening around the world and say, you know, I have a part to play, I also contribute to the chaos that is around me, I also have the power to contribute to developing greater harmony, what is Baba's advice to me?
Swami has given solutions to lots and lots of problems, because all these solutions are aimed at one interesting result. The result is, as I observed in the beginning, sanctifying your own life.
Mm.
The purpose of life is to sanctify your own life. Actually, so I told you already, it is very important for you to sanctify your life. You are living here, you sanctify your life. And again, coming onto the planet, taking more and more births is not considered to be the purpose. So, once you are born, there is nothing like being born again. How do we do it? We do it by leading a good life. For that, we need to have actually control over our desires. The world is very attractive. It is going to attract you because it is materialistic thinking that actually drags you into this world. And it's a big trap. You get trapped into it, you will definitely contribute to the deterioration of the world without any doubt, because it is within the nature of capitalistic thinking itself. Materialistic philosophy is to destroy your life and also to contribute to the destruction of the society. Now the other way is a spiritual way. So in which direction you are going to turn your mind? Are you going to turn it towards the materialistic road, or are you ready to take to the spiritual road?
Or can I not integrate the two and live a balanced life of harmony?
It is possible when you are able to actually make a harmonious blend of both. Harmonious blend of both means there is a principle given to us wherein we say enlightened self-interest should be the most important principle to be followed. Enlightened self-interest is minimum what is required for your living you seek. The rest of it you leave it. That means you will not be wasting anything. As observed by Dr. Anand, don't waste time, don't waste food, don't waste water, don't waste electricity, don't waste resources, energy. All sorts of things are there. And maybe because of illiteracy, what we are doing in the countries, we are wasting lots and lots of things. That is causing lot of problems. At a very high level, a program of education where you educate all the people on all these things is very, very important. This is given. For example, millions of people are living in slums. They don't have even a glass of water to drink. They don't have one square meal a day. Whereas from the five-star hotel, we see so much of wonderful stuff is thrown into the dustbins. This is the way it is happening, where we are not using our discrimination and work for the better society. So ceiling on desires is, we can provide actually the minimum that is required to everybody, provided that we lead a decent life. If we lead a real human life.
I think this context of not wasting anything is very, very close to Swami's heart, and I would like to narrate one or two instances which come to my mind of Swami as an example. When Swami would call us for interviews, for, you know, the drama rehearsal, for any other reason, Swami would enter, call us, and then enter the interview room first. And then he would put on the light switch and the fan switch together at the same instance. And so we were looking at Swami, you know, switching on, putting on the switches. And then Swami looked back at us and, you know, asked, why do you think I put on both these switches together?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I enter and put on the light switch first and then the fan switch, I have actually wasted 3 seconds of light.
Wow.
Just to prevent that wastage of even three seconds of the tube light burning, I will put both these switches together. So that is the example that Swami always sets for us. In terms of food, Swami is very particular that we should never waste even a single morsel of food.
And also, Anand, let me add here, Swami, when he comes out to pick up people for interviews, mm-hmm. he puts off the light on the fan,
yes.
and he goes out.
He goes out.
He puts it on only when he enters the room, and when he comes out again, he puts it off.
Imagine if all of us remembered it every time we went in and out of our rooms.
And you must look at the corporate offices, where the lights, the whole department will go on burning when only one person is working. So that's a Swami says, it is not only a mistake, it's a sin. Because you have not created energy, how can you destroy it? So we have all a responsibility. In terms of wasting of food, Swami always would tell boys to never to waste food, because
yes.
Swami would say, Annam Brahma. The food itself is God. There's one very interesting episode here, which I'd like to narrate. That Swami had taken us to Kodaikanal, and we are supposed to fly from Bangalore to Madurai. Mm. And from Madurai onwards, buses were arranged to take us to Kodaikanal. So we had started with breakfast here in Fray Vrindavan. Then food was served on the aircraft. So by the time we landed in Madurai, our stomachs and pockets were full, because we could not finish the breakfast given to us even in the aircraft, so cashews and all that were in our pockets. So once we arrived there with our stomachs full, lunch had been arranged at around 11 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, unfortunately, the whole food was already pre-served with around 20 items on the plates. And then Swami was walking along. We were all sitting in a roundabout fashion. And Swami is walking in the center with the convener of the Samiti, who had made the arrangements for our food. And Swami was praising us and telling, see my boys, they eat very well. And they never waste food. Annam Brahma for them. And they treat food as God. And we were wondering, Swami, where this food is going to go? It has to go into our liver and our lungs and our heart. Because in the stomach there is no space. And the boy next to me, it was leaf plate, so when Swami turned and Swami's back was towards us, this boy just took one or two items and then closed his leaf to indicate as if he has already finished while the food was still in his plate. I was fully aware of that and I was struggling with my food. So Swami turned back and straight came towards this boy next to me and told the convener, this boy, very good boy, he never wastes food. Annam Brahma for him. And lo and behold, Swami came and he lifted the covered part of his leaf plate.
Wow.
And would you believe what we all saw? There was no food there. It had just gone and I nearly jumped my seat because I had just now seen him not finishing his food and then closing his plate. So Swami went further and telling him that he's a good boy. Even he was surprised. What happened? And he again opened his plate and what did we see there? The entire leftover food was still intact into that plate. Wow. So where did it go?
So Swami just made him look good for the sake of teaching him a lesson.
Teaching him a lesson and not only him.
Saving his face.
See, this is God. He will teach us a lesson, but
without
he will never let us down.
Yeah.
Right? So that is one beautiful example.
Yeah.
And the last example which comes to my mind is again from Kodaikanal. Swami had gone once and we had already come to Sai Shruti. And when Swami came, he got, sugar candies, which are fluffed one, like wool, right? Orange colored ones, that your children love to have that. And he had got 100 of them.
So cotton candies.
Got 100 of them. And then you're all surprised, this is meant for small kids and you're grown up boys. So you're all laughing and taking it from Swami. And then Swami said, why I gave this to you? He said, Swami, only you can tell. And he said, see, there's one boy who is an orphan. He sits near the lake and sells his candies. In the morning, he goes to school. And in the evening, he sells these candies and makes his living so that he can pay his education fees. To encourage him, I not only gave him the amount which is due for this particular candies, I gave him double the amount. I encouraged him to study and become a bright person. Even when he will give us, 500 rupee notes sometimes, to go and buy and make purchases, Swami will be very particular. He says, don't go and buy from the other shopkeepers. These Tibetan people who make these homemade items and travel all the way from Tibet and come to Kodaikanal to be able to, take some money back for their children and their families back home, go and buy only from them. See, in that particular fashion, Swami is teaching us that the money should also go where it is needed.
Yeah.
It should not go and sustain the greed of people. Even when Swami says giving to beggars, be careful. Don't give to a beggar who will utilize the money for any wrong purpose, for smoking or drinking, because the part of the sin of giving to the wrong person also goes to you. That is why be very careful in terms of food, in terms of money, in terms of energy, and in terms of your time. Do not ever waste, because you have not created all this.
Let's
God
talk about wastage of time. Swami says time is God.
Yes.
And as students and as an academician, what do you know of Baba's advice regarding wastage of time?
Oh, Swami is very particular that not a moment should be wasted, right? In fact, he is so particular that we should follow his advice. In fact, there was one Mr. Brahmanandam who was serving Bhagwan in Trivindavan, and that episode is well known to some of us devotees, that Swami called him from his room and he was going down with a flask of coffee to keep it on the table. And so he thought, okay, Swami has called me, but let me just go and keep this flask, then I will be, having free hands to be able to serve Swami and go upstairs again. And when he went up after a minute's time, Swami asked him, why have you come? He said, Swami, you called me. Swami said, I called you 1 minute earlier. I did not call you now. You can go. The work is done. So that was a lesson for him. And Swami, if you look at the schedule of the hostel, where I've lived 10 years' time, has been handwritten by Bhagwan and given to the first warden.
And Dr. Anand, can I add to that incident where Swami asked the person, you came 1 minute too late?
Hmm.
I believe he also reminded him, when you are in trouble, or any of my devotees,
yes,
when you call me for rescue, for example,
right,
you're in a traffic accident and there's a car coming straight on to you and he says, Swami, save me. If I say, okay, let me put my flask away and go a minute later to save you, things can end up very ugly. deeply. So when I respond to your prayers at that very moment, regardless of where you are, I also expect you to respond to my command at that time.
But I'll make an exception to your comment also, sister. Because I think if you really surrender to Bhagwan, he will come even before we call him.
Yes.
And that was the instance where now Dr. Hislop was going from here to Vrindavan, and Swami had already left, that they hired a cab, and while they were overtaking a truck, they did not see a bus coming from the opposite direction. And they had a head-on collision but did not have it. Because the bus and the car, the cab they were traveling, passed through each other in a fraction of a second. And when they reached Vrindavan, Swami called Dr. Hislop and told him, when that moment of crisis arrived, you did not even remember to call my name. But even then I came and protected you and served you. So I think it is always important for us to value time. Because time is God, Swami says. Time once gone will never come back again. And that is why whatever we have to do in this life, we have to do it right here and now. Live in the present and make the best of it. And what does Swami say is the best way to spend our present moment? In fact, one of the students who was from the Brahmin family came to Bhagwan and he asked on his birthday from Bhagwan, Swami, give me a mantra. I want to chant a mantra. And Swami said, why do you need another mantra? I've already given the mantra. And that is love all and serve all, help ever and hurt never. He said, no Swami, I want a personal special mantra for me. My father said, get it from Swami. So Swami said, there's nothing special and secret. You know, if Arjuna were to say, you know, the whole Bhagavad Gita is privately, personally given to me and I will not share it. And now it doesn't make sense because society has to benefit. But I'll give you a mantra. And the mantra which Swami gave him, I think which really tells us the value of time is, Swami said, the mantra I'll give you is this, and you must practice that, and that is, Lavu, Navu, Navu. So, meaning in English, Lavu, basically love. Arouse that spring of love in your heart, and Navu, and smile. And smile and laugh and spread joy to everybody. And now, basically that in the present moment.
Live in the moment.
In the present moment, arouse a love in your heart and bring a smile on your face. That is the best way to live your life on this earth.
Yeah, as opposed to what he often told us was to maintain what he described as castor oil face.
Swami, I am here from 1979, ever since he started the college. So Swami was always insisting on very interesting one thing. Keep the boys busy from morning till evening. You have to keep them busy with something or the other all the time. So
like
that
positively occupied.
All the time. Every minute give them some work or the other. So that there is no time for them to think of things which can really harm them. That is how you pack the entire schedule from morning till evening. So, Bhagavan Baba was insisting from the day one onwards that we have Omkaram Suprabhatam early hours. Immediately you have to go for jogging, yoga asanas, running, around, then come back, take your bath, then go for breakfast, immediately rush to college. And in the college, Swami said there will not be a single free period. Not even a single free period should be given to the students. All the period should be occupied with one lecture or the other. And in the beginning, 79 to 81, it was a degree college. And it was so that some teachers, sometimes they go on leave. When a teacher is on leave, that period which the teacher was supposed to take, what the boys were to do at that time? What were they expected to do? And he called the principal in those days, Amarendra, and said, ask some other teacher to engage that period. Generally, we don't do it in degree colleges. We do it in high schools and all that. But Swami said, how does it make any difference? Even in the degree college, you should do it. So, on most of the occasions, I was asked to go and engage the free periods. I teach basically BA students. And a teacher teaching BCom students is on leave, so I was asked to go there. And I was giving them lectures on First World War and Second World War and other things. Keep them engaged. You give them some general knowledge also.
Of course.
So till 4 o'clock, and the lunch time is just sufficient for them to finish their lunch and rush back to college.
Yeah.
Immediately after the college, you have sports. And sports also, for some classes, sports are there. Some students come to Mandir. batch by batch regularly. And after bhajans are over, they are back there to immediately get into their routine. And study hours are there. Till 10 o'clock in the night, the boys' schedule is totally packed and there is no time for anybody to get into
it. And it's so well regulated. I guess by the time they hit their beds, they would just knock out like this because they've been so constructively engaged.
That is one thing.
And it just goes against this new age idea of, you know, downtime and me time.
Yeah.
You just keep them constructively engaged. So before we conclude today's discussion, I would like to hear your final thoughts, both of you.
There are two more points which I want to make. In this context of time, Swami said the time schedule is so well packed, and don't think that it is going to be strenuous with these students, because he says they are very energetic. Their energy is to be positively utilized, channelized perfectly, and you should give them good health, good body, good mind. This is very, very important. So you put them on the right track by utilizing all the time. And Swami tries to convince us and tell us one very interesting thing. And he told us, I am reminding you of this fact which is there in India through spiritual texts given to the entire world, that time is God. Kalaya namaha, kala kalaya namaha, kala titaya namaha, kala swarupaya namaha. God is the very embodiment of time. If you waste time, you are wasting something very significant in your life, because think for a while, a second which is gone, you can never get it back in your life. Impossible. The time is the most sanctified thing in one's life. And that most sanctified thing is to be something like worshipped. Every second of your life you should be conscious and use that time to sanctify your life. Time is God. If you are wasting time, you are committing a big sin. And people come to you. You never know when they come. You are in the bed sleeping in the night, 12 o'clock, they come and knock on your door and say, sir, I need your help. You don't say, no, I'm sleeping now. That is the right time for you to help somebody, because that time is going to be sanctified, utilized in the best manner. So, time is God. The concept to be actually taught to the students and all the even elderly people also. And Swami said, time, everybody, every teacher, every wife, every husband, every person should understand. Whatever you are doing, at the back of your mind, you should always be chanting the name of God. You are cooking. Even while cooking, it is possible for you to say, Sairam, 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 Sairam. You are reading. Still, you can always think, Sairam, Sairam, Sairam. Have the picture of God behind. You can slowly get used to this type of thing. It becomes a part of your routine, your thinking, your psyche. It becomes so part of your body, you become a spiritual being. Because you are rightly utilizing the time. Though you are involved in some work, still you are actually chanting the mantra at the back of your mind. That is the most important thing, is to use the time for spiritual purpose while being in the world. You're doing the worldly thing, also spiritualizing it. The result is going to be spiritualized. The output is going to be something very significant, which is going to help you and also help the society. That is the reason why Bhagavan Baba said, first of all, train your mind. That is possible by utilizing the time properly. That's why we must remember the sutra, Kalaya Namaha, Kala Kalaya Namaha, Kala Titaya Namaha, Kala Swarupa. Time is God. Time is God.
I revere it, worship it, utilize it well.
You better remember this point. I am telling you, from childhood, if we teach the children all these things, they are all innocent children. When you tell them, you know, they'll catch it. According to Swami, the mistake lies with the parents and the teachers. Children are very good always. They are ready to take what you give them. You are not giving them the right things. Don't blame them. So parents and teachers are to be properly trained. That is the reason. And Swami gave a lot of importance to time. Pack their time from morning till evening. As you said, they hit the bed and they sleep. Because they are so tired by the time evening. And early to bed is very important. Mm. Early to get up is very important.
And they have no mind space for distractions and to think negative thoughts, because they are constructively engaged.
Yeah, so I think we had a beautiful discussion, but I would like to conclude, you know, all the summary of our thoughts. One thing was, you know, as Mahatma Gandhi, you know, once said, that the earth provides enough to satisfy everyone's need, but not everyone's greed.
One's greed.
Not even one person's greed.
Not one's greed.
Never mind
everybody
the greed of 9 billion of us collectively.
Everybody's needs.
We need many ones. More planets to satisfy our greed.
That is why today the corporates must understand.
But pardon me, we won't spare other planets also.
I know, we're quite self-destructive, that's true.
So we have to, in our enlightened self-interest, the corporates should really understand that if we really want to sustain our businesses, really want to have, you know, long-term view of our businesses, we have to take care of the environment. That is one particular part. Because this spaceship Earth is the only one that we have. Once we destroy it, in the whole universe, we have
nowhere else to go. We're all going down together.
And for that, we have to master the mind. Individual has to master the mind, and the corporate leadership must also create circumstances and master the minds of not only themselves, but also all the corporate employees and their stakeholders, and tell them that it is for our own selves, investing in our own future, that we must take care of the environment. And as Sir said, we must always remember that the goal of life is self-enlightenment, self-realization, merging, going back to the source. In fact, we do not know tomorrow we will live or not. There was a story in Mahabharata when everything was done and Yudhishthira was giving away a lot of arms to people. There were some sages who were still left over late in the night. So he sent them away, told Bhima, you send them away, call them tomorrow morning and I will give them the requisite arms. And then he had also made an announcement and, you know, put a big bell outside the palace and declared, if anybody sees a very strange thing, or something unusual, they must ring the bell, I'll immediately attend. So after some time, you know, Yudhishthira hears the bell ring very loudly. So he comes out and says, who it is? He says, Bhima himself. He says, Bhima, what's wrong with you? Just now I told you we're getting very late for the, you know, the whole palace proceedings, and we send those particular sages off. And why do you ring the bell? And Bhima said, today I have seen a man who knows tomorrow perfectly, who has seen tomorrow. And he says, who's that man? He says, it is you, king. Yudhishthira says, how can I know about tomorrow? He says, just now send those sages back. That means you are 100% sure that you will live till tomorrow. Mm. Those sages will live till tomorrow. You will have the kingdom till tomorrow. You will have the ability to give them arms tomorrow. That means you are perfectly seen tomorrow. And Yudhishthira realized his mistake and said, immediately call those sages back. And before I give them arms, I will not go to bed. So that is, we do not know about tomorrow. Today is a time that we have to live in true lavu, navu and navu, in the present moment with love and smile. And Swami says we have to move forward. Now Swami says, you know, the four continuums. Vyakti, we love ourselves very much. But we have to expand this love to Vyashti, to society. And then expand it further on to Prakriti, the nature. And finally, we then only will be able to go back to the source, that is Parmeshti. That is the realization and the end and the sanam bonam of our lives. If we don't have that particular focus, if we live in a narrow-minded fashion, we have not lived a life at all. Then we should not call ourselves devotees of Bhagwan, because Bhagwan always says expansion is life and contraction is death. So we have to always keep the principles that Bhagwan has lived by and taught us in our lives. And then these are my concluding words of summarization.
Very powerful words, Professor Gangadhar Shastri, Dr. Deepak Anand. I have learned so much today from this discussion, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it deeply. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Sairam, sir.
Sairam. Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. The time right now in the ashram is 10:38 a.m. and today is the 1st of August 2013. You just heard the concluding part of a discussion with Professor Gangadhar Shastri and Dr. Deepak Anand of the Sai University on the topic of natural disasters and their spiritual implications. Now, just in case you missed part one of this discussion,
Please log on to Thursday Live Archives on our website, radiosci.org. Part 1 can be found under Morning Glory of July the 25th, 2013. Meanwhile, what are your thoughts on this subject? Do you concur with the experts? If not, why not? We'd love to hear from you. Please send in your emails, as always, to listener@radiosci.org. Now, moving along, time for feature presentation, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Today, I have the pleasure of playing for you part one of this two-part conversation with Mr. Pratim Banerjee. Brother Pratim Banerjee is an alumnus of both the Sci School System and the Sci University, and today he is in conversation with Radio Sci's Mr. Bishu Prushti. Over now to Pratim Banerjee.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And today in the studios we have Mr. Pratim Banerjee, a very illustrious and talented alumnus of Bhagwan's University. He joined the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School in 2003 for his 11th grade and then moved on to the Vrindavan campus of Bhagwan's University to pursue his Bachelor's in Sciences, BSc Mathematics honors, and then he moved on to the Prashantilam campus where he did his Master's in Sciences, and then interestingly he went on to do his Master's in Business Administration continuing in the Prashantilam campus. So that is 2 + 3 + 2 + 2, it's almost 9 years, right? 9 years in Bhagwan's University. And in 2012 he left the portals, and after a thorough, grueling selection procedure, he was really fortunate to get into TAS, that is the Tata Administrative Service, one of those prestigious service international organizations of India. And the last 1 year, he's had extensive training as a member of TAS, and now he's posted in UK. He's got an assignment from Tata Steel to work in UK. So he's leaving in a couple of days and he's come here for a short break, and we are so happy that he's here in the studios. And let me also mention that not many people know this, that he is actually the grandson of the legendary Uday Shankar and Amla Shankar. Uday Shankar, people who are familiar will know, he's the legendary dancer. I mean, he was awarded Padma Vibhushan by the government of India way back in the 1970s, and he's done yeoman service to Indian art and especially popularizing Indian culture and Indian music in various forms, and that tradition even continues even till this day thanks to Madam Amala Shankar and her daughters and her daughter-in-law. And he actually belongs to that extremely blessed family, blessed with tremendous talent. And as expected, he too is tremendously gifted. He's amazing singer, he's acted in so many performances, dramas in front of Bhagwan as a student of Bhagwan's University. He has been an athletic champion for 3 years, so every field you have Pratim doing whatever he can to offer his talent to God. So we're really happy that he's here with us, because 9 years, and 9 years not only as a student but also someone who participated in various extracurricular activities. And the calendar in Puttaparthi is filled of that. There's no celebration in Puttaparthi where students are not part of. And if you are someone who has something to offer to Bhagwan in terms of talent, you are also blessed with many beautiful opportunities and interactions and memories. So let's see if we can tap some of those cherished moments, because every moment with the Lord is a lesson. Is a lesson for Him, and through Him it's a lesson for all of us. Welcome Pratim to the studios.
Thank you, Bishu.
So, where do we begin?
Maybe how I got into Swami's Institute.
Definitely. Let's start from there.
Yeah, so this was way back in 2003.
Okay.
And I had this opportunity to study in at the Sindhya School, which is like one of the most prestigious educational institutions across the country. It falls in the same league as Dhun School, Dehradun, and Mayo College, Ajmer. So, it's like one of the finest boarding schools in country.
Where?
At Gwalior.
Gwalior.
I was there because my uncle had studied there, and, you know, he wanted me to go ahead and join that place. having studied there for 7 years, I had joined in my third standard.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere around my 10th standard, that is the time when I started feeling restless from within, that I needed change. I wanted to go out somewhere. I didn't know where exactly, but I wanted to go out. And my grandmom, as you mentioned, she happened to, visit us pretty frequently. And she used to say that, in Puttaparthi, the students are very disciplined.
Okay.
And I see a different glow on their faces. Being an artist, she has always been the types, who admires beauty, who admires good looks.
Yes.
And discipline. So
yes.
She always told me that, that's the place where you should go. And I used to wonder, why exactly is she telling me this? Because I am at one of the finest places that, an educational place that
yes.
one can look for. And now when I look back, I realize one of my super seniors, he was like 6 years senior to me, he happened to be Swami's devotee. And he had put up Swami's photo in our common room.
Mm-hmm.
In
Gwalior?
In Gwalior.
Okay.
And I used to, at that point in time, wonder, hey, isn't this the same person whom my grandmom visits?
Oh, you had no introduction to Swami?
I had no introduction to Swami.
Okay.
My mom happened to come to Swami for his 75th birthday.
Okay.
And after that, my dad came the following year.
75th birthday was 2000, yes.
So, that's when my mom had come down for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That was how she got introduced to Swami.
Okay.
In 2001, I had gone into my 10th standard. That summer vacations, my dad happened to come to Bangalore, Vrindavan.
Okay.
And there he had written a letter to Swami with a lot of trepidation, wondering whether Swami would accept the letter or not, saying that, Swami, I'm tired. Please take care of my children,
mm-hmm.
my son and daughter. I mean, a lot of things put together. Now when I look back, I realize that why I had started feeling restless was maybe Swami wanted me to, pull me to his fold. And adjusting, Sindhya being a, boarding school, it has a lot of regality to it, a lot of opulence. So coming from that kind of a background and adjusting here was tough. And I still remember that when I came to write my entrance exam, Swami was in Vrindavan that time. And both my sisters, she had just finished her 12th standard. Both of us had come and I was waiting outside Vrindavan wondering, for the first time in my life, like going into an ashram. So I was wondering, what would an ashram be like?
This is after writing the entrance?
No, just before that.
Before the entrance.
Okay. I had come to write my entrance
okay.
exam. And I was wondering, would it have thatched roofs? How would it be?
Like a hermitage from the ancient times.
Yes, yes. And I was a typical adolescent, arrogant brat. I remember going in and we had got accommodation in the place next to foreign canteen in Vrindavan.
Okay.
Where all the foreigners
yes,
stay.
Yes, there are a few rooms adjacent to the canteen, yes.
So we were staying there and I remember over the Saraswati statue, Shamiana had been erected. And
yes.
I remember mocking and saying, "Are, being such a great man, he is giving darshan in under Shamiana." So that was the kind of, arrogance I had at that point in time. But the very first darshan I had, it was, I don't know how to describe that experience. I remember Swami coming out from the leftmost door, the smaller doors, not the main thing.
Okay.
And Swami came out and he just looked in my direction and looked as though he's making an eye contact with me.
Where were you? You were sitting?
I was sitting way behind.
Way behind.
Somewhere in the public. I mean, we had not yet got our passes.
Yes. So maybe it's a third or fourth block.
Yeah. It would be like about 50 feet, 100 feet.
Yes.
Around that distance. And it was a prying look into my eyes. And then the mood softened and Swami, as though he was telling me, "Oh, so you have come finally." That kind of a look he gave. And I still remember, I'm getting goosebumps even as I think of that moment. I got a chill down my spine. And somewhere I felt as though, I know this man. I mean, I have seen him before. Though I had never come to Puttaparthi, I didn't know anything. And that was a very unique experience. And right next to me, there was this kid who was mentally challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Or as we say, specially abled. And he was weeping out to Swami. And seeing all that, the entire environment, it kind of totally calmed me down. I became so silent from within. And of course, the next few days were introspection days because having come from a very different background and, seeing people here wearing white and white and, carrying books in hands, and I was just wondering whether I would be a misfit in this kind of a place. would people here, you know, just meditate and levitate, and how would I fit in here?
I know. I mean, two thoughts come to my mind, because you mentioned that you are kind of a typical arrogant brat, and it'll generally happen if you're studying in a sort of a royal school with which has a lot of scope for adventure and fun and all that. And definitely coming into this space and someone says, now you go to an environment which is disciplined, you will immediately revolt.
And it's not that my parents forced me, because my principal at Sindhya School, he tried luring me with a lot of exchange programs abroad and stuff. He said, he has potential, let him stay back. This is when he'll grow. My dad had left the choice to me totally, but I don't know why I wanted from within. I said, no, I want to leave. So it was all out of my volition. I had chosen to go out. I had told all my friends. They were in fact, you know, totally irritated with me. That why the hell does he want to leave? I mean, this is the fun time, you know, when we'll have a gala time in the campus.
Yes.
Why does he want to leave now? And I had told, no, I just want to go. It's
but okay. You had no answer why you wanted.
Why? I wanted to go. I don't know why. So now when I put all these things together, I know it was Swami only, because he's sitting in everybody's heart. He's the one who pulls
the one who stirred all those feelings in you.
So I remember going out and asking people, so are there sports facilities in this place? Because I am a sports person. I want some sports facilities. And that's when an aunt who's very close to Swami, she had told me there's an international stadium in Puttaparthi where an international match had taken place a few years back.
Yeah, 97 you had that match.
So that kind of, you know, motivated me. Okay, chalo, there is like
kuch to hai, there is something.
Yeah, so I should go ahead. And then of course after coming to Parthi also, I was pretty happy with the ambience and stuff.
Two things. One is that darshan had some impact in you. Like you felt Swami seeing directly. And perhaps after that you possibly started seeing things in a more positive light. And so this feeling of, you know, I'm getting stuck in a place which is so much into what you're saying, bhajans, meditation, all that didn't bother you at that point.
Actually, I never saw bhajans as bhajan. I saw bhajans as songs.
Songs.
And
music.
Yeah, and there was this period in my life, because that's when the voice changes, right?
Yes.
So there was this period for like 2 years I had not sung at all. And
okay.
It used to eat me up from within. That why am I not able to sing like I used to earlier? I had such a sweet voice.
Yes.
Where is that voice gone? You know, such things. And that was after 2 years that my dad was also very happy, because after 2 years he had heard me throw my voice and sing.
Okay.
Though I didn't know the lyrics, I used to just hum the tunes loudly, sitting in bhajans. So I really liked the atmosphere there.
So there were sports and there was some music.
Music, yes.
So it's not all that dry and dull as you thought.
Exactly. So, and then even after coming to Parthi, my sister got selected into ATP campus, Anandpur
campus.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
She got into her BSc physics course. Without much ado, she got in. So, you know, that thing again started working, the sibling rivalry.
Yes.
She's got in, what about me? And I remember writing the entrance exam at the higher secondary school, and I didn't do well at all. Maybe that was one of the few exams where I didn't do well. I came out, my mom was standing there. She asked me, so how did it go? I said, very bad, let's leave. I'm not going to clear the exam.
You found the paper tough?
Tough, yes. I mean, especially the chemistry portion. So, and she was shocked, because I was pretty good at academics also, and though I was not the top of it, I was in the top quartile at least. So she was surprised, but I remember that day, and what was eating me more than anything else was that now with what face do I go back to my friends?
You could clear this entrance.
And they were all like telling me, don't go, and I was adamant, now if I have to go back to Sindhya, how do I stay there? What do I
do? A laughing stock.
Yeah. That evening, I remember, mom had just told me, don't worry, pray hard to Baba. He would help you clear. I said, what do you mean by pray?
Concept of prayer itself was alien.
So, I used to pray, but I never understood what it means. You know, I had my own Ishta Devatas, as they say. I used to go to a Devi temple.
Okay.
Nice talking and all that stuff.
You should have some conversations.
Some conversations.
Okay.
I used to like Ganesh Bhagwan a lot.
Okay.
So, my mom told, you know what prayer means? Just nag him. Nag him to that extent that finally he yields and says, okay, just leave me, I'm going to give you a seat. Take it to that extent.
Persist.
So I remember bhajans were there in the bhajan hall here, without mics.
Yes.
Of course. And my mom, because she had been a frequent visitor to Prashanthi Nilayam with my grandmom, she got a place in the front. And I was somewhere in the public, and my mom, having gone inside, she had just mentally, you know, made a note or a prayer to Swami, that Swami, if my son gets a place inside today, I would take it as an indication that you have accepted him. So you won't believe, I was the last but one person to get in the bhajan hall.
Okay, oh, get inside the
inside
bhajan,
the bhajan hall.
Oh, I thought get in means get into the...
No. Inside the bhajan hall.
School.
So, okay. I sat there, remember that...
So you were not a student then, but you had the chance to come inside the bhajan hall.
Because when Swami was in Vrindavan, those days, after the singers, public used
to
be there.
So the time Bhagwan was in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So
yes.
I went in and I remember sitting there and praying to that bronze statue of Swami's, saying that, please Swami, give me this one chance. I don't know with what face do I go back to my friends. I remember telling him honestly, pouring out my heart. And then after the bhajans, when we went and checked our, we saw that my name was there on the...
You have cleared the written test.
And even the interview, in the interview, they asked me, you know, you've written here that you sing. Can you sing something for us? And I sang a Meera bhajan, I think. And I was myself amazed to hear, where is this voice coming from?
Oh, is it?
I had not heard myself for like 2 years, and how did I sing this well? And there were quite a lot of senior teachers sitting there, former principal, Mr. Habbu sir.
Habbu sir, yes. But you were used to singing devotional songs?
No, I had just sung once in this a
one.
Competition.
For a competition. That's the only devotional song in you.
So, I sang, and finally I remember one of them saying, yes, you are through.
Okay.
So now I still don't know whether it was one of them, or was it a word, like, sentence in my head going on or something. So that's how I got into Swami's fold, and then of course, adjusted to the ways of life here pretty easily. Again, my father was very anxious whether I would be able to adjust to this kind of a lifestyle.
Mm.
Because there it's all very different. You know, we sit on tables, we have waiters serving us, and you have to use cutlery for all your meals and stuff. And sitting here on the floor, I remember first time there was this boy serving rasam. He went around saying rasam, rasam, rasam. I didn't know what rasam meant. Yeah, I gave my glass. I thought it's rasgulla. Maybe they're calling rasam.
Oh my God.
So I gave my glass to him, and he
coming
said...
Coming from a Bengali background, could only think of rasgulla.
So he said, no, it's meant to be eaten with rice. And I took it. So that's how, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, everything was so different.
So different, but it fell in place.
Hmm. So was it really difficult in the sense that you are saying there you are served, and you know, you are supposed to eat with cutlery, and here you have to sit down, you wash your own plate, and eventually you have to serve.
No, now when I look back, I think it should have been tough, but it never was. Maybe because I would say that, yes, I made the choice of getting in.
Yes.
But somewhere down within, I know that Swami had ensured that, you know, mentally I adjust to this place much.
Yes, he was working all the time.
He was working all the time.
Mm. So you never sort of got very frustrated or something? You're only constantly seeing how I can adapt?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Plus, of course, the sports facilities.
Yeah, oh, that was a big motivation.
Music part of it.
Music part, yes.
It was really helpful.
So what were those moments in the school that you really cherish? I mean, perhaps they are related to music or sports, I don't know. Or how was it with Bhagwan after that? Maybe Swami came back to Prashantilam, right? In June, Swami was in Prashantilam that year?
Yes, yes. Not in June. He came on 9th July.
9th July.
Yeah, that's when he had, that...
Oh, okay. That accident and the fracture. Yes, okay.
So he had told all our teachers that I would come on 9th. So everybody thought it's 9th June. But then he came a month later on 9th
July. Okay.
And I remember, I mean, such strange things started to happen to me. As in, the first time on 9th July when Swami's car came in, I was sitting with one of the students, you know, my own classmate, who has been in Swami's school since his first standard.
Okay.
So he was telling me a lot of things, you know, he's a regular singer here, and this is where the bhajans happen and all that. Because till then we had not gone to mandir. We had bhajans in our hostel.
The hostel. Only when Swami comes, you start going to the mandir. Yes.
So he was telling me all that, and I remember the moment I saw the orange color in the car, I started weeping uncontrollably for some reason. And I was wondering, I was feeling embarrassed that, oh God, everybody's looking at me. Why am I crying? But I just cried.
We saw him and you just started crying.
It was very strange. And my classmate, he was saying that, why are you crying? Don't cry. It's okay. Swami is fine. And, you know, he was trying to console me.
Oh, he was thinking possibly that you're feeling sorry for Swami. Hmm. That Swami is sort of now coming
but
in the car.
That wasn't the reason. There was no reason why I was crying.
Just something happening with
him. Yeah. And I wept like a child. And then I felt very light, very nice.
It almost seems like a lot of past just got washed away.
Yeah, could be. I mean, that's how I see it now. So that was one incident. And after that, from day one, my friends had told me, my classmates, that we hear that you're very good at athletics. So, you know, every year Swami awards medals and trophies to the champions. So I had made up my mind that I have to get something from Swami's hands. So from day one, I started practicing a lot.
Wow.
So every evening, as soon as, you know, I had this opportunity, I used to rush back to hostel, run back from Mandir, change into my sports dress and just go for practice. And I knew few good athletes in my class who would be like competitors, but I never saw them practicing. And that never, you know, deterred me from going for practice. I practiced for like 2-3 months.
So in June itself you started practicing?
Not exactly June, maybe sometime in July.
July. I mean, generally people get serious 1 or 2 months before the athletics start. The motivation was you wanted to get something from Swami's hand.
And I didn't see any other way to get it because I didn't know bhajans. I didn't know...
It means you had just begun to sing.
Yeah.
Getting introduced to bhajans.
And for me, catching those lyrics were a bit tough. So I used to catch the tunes very fast, but the lyrics were a bit... That was a tricky part in the song. So,
yes.
I practiced really hard. And
many times it could happen. I've seen with these boys who are not used to bhajans. When they come, as you mentioned, you know, they'll get the tune. But many times, you know, they'll create their own lyrics. Suddenly, while singing, you forget one tune, one line, all that will happen, yeah. So, sometimes you just have to get into the groove for some time, yeah. So, yeah, how it was after that you started practicing?
I started practicing and then when the athletics event started, I stood first in 4 out of 5 events.
Cool.
And the fifth one was, in fact, I was always a high jumper.
Okay.
But the physical instructor at school, he said, you know, you're not all that tall, so why do you want to take a chance with high jump? Because the boys here are pretty good at it. Why don't you go for shot put? You're built for that.
Okay.
And that was the first time I threw shot put. And you won't believe I broke the school record.
Oh my God. I don't know
how I threw it. I just remember looking at the Hanuman statue praying to him, Swami, I want something from your hand. And I threw it. It broke the school record.
Cool.
So,
amazing.
That's how, and the final event was the long jump. It was my pet event, as they say. I had got at least one medal there.
Okay.
And there is a lesson hidden here, which I want to share. By then, this thing had gone into my head that, yes, I am the athletics champion. I can create a record of, you know, having won the gold medal in all the 5 events. So, I am the person. I am doing it.
Mm.
And yes, I am the champion.
Because things are happening, you know.
So, that got into my head.
First
jump foul, second jump foul, third jump foul. All 3 foul jumps, I am disqualified out of the event.
Oh my God.
So then as though something in my head is saying, look, it's me who's doing it. Okay. The moment you try to act over smart, the moment you think you're the doer, this is what will happen. So that was the lesson that even if, you know, there are good times that a person sees, there are bad times that a person sees. The important thing to know is when you see good times, keep your head low, feel, you know, humble and offer it to him because he's the one who's doing it. When you see bad times, know that it's for your own good.
Yes.
And take a good lesson from it and be patient because finally the tide is going to turn over.
Yes.
And the bad time is going to turn into good.
Yes.
So that was a lesson learned there that, you know, be humble. Don't think that you are the doer and, you know, you are always winning. You are the one who is.
But it's really amazing that, you know, this was in your 11th class.
11th class.
Even though you didn't have any sort of spiritual training before, just by being in the school and that environment, you started getting these thoughts.
Yes.
That, you know, I'm getting egoistic or this is getting on top or into my head.
Mm-hmm.
That is something amazing when you reflect on it. I mean, to get such kind of thoughts coming from a very different background.
Actually, every day in school was a surprise to me. I mean, I myself started to become a surprise. I used to surprise myself. I mean, how am I getting these thoughts? Why am I thinking like this? What is propelling me to? And it was a lot of, you know, thought experiment that used to go on in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years of school, the best part started happening sometime at the end of my 11th class where we put up programs in front of Bhagwan. We used to call those corridor dramas,
mm-hmm.
right in front of the portico.
Yes.
The small plays we used to do.
Swami always was asking for programs, right?
Yes.
I think it was that period.
Yes.
And you were really very fortunate during that period. I think 2003, 2004 till almost 2008, 2009. Swami was sort of really hungry for programs, if you can use that word. You'd always ask for programs and amazing opportunities.
And right? Being in school, actually, you don't get those many opportunities. It's always like the PG pillalu that Swami used to look out for.
Mm.
But that year, because fortunately for us, the institute boys, they had their exams, the final end semester exams going on.
Okay.
So the buck was pushed on to us that school boys, anyways, from 11th, you will go to 12th. So what's the big deal? You all as well, put up some programs.
Spend some time and do some programs.
Yeah. So, and we didn't mind it. We did two programs in our 12th in a span of like 4 days, I believe.
Oh my God.
4 or 5 days. That was during our annual exams.
During the exam. I don't think it happens anywhere else, you know. I mean, can you imagine between annual exams you're going and performing dramas?
And you won't believe. I mean, none of that affects our results in any ways. Not that our teachers become lenient in giving marks. But I honestly feel that a person who's good at extracurriculars has to be good at academics. Because what matters in extracurriculars is your focus.
Focus.
And if you are able to focus somewhere there, I'm sure you don't need 10 hours of study. You can as will do with 1 hour of study.
Yes. I think that's what Salish sir, Dr. Salish Srivastav, he once mentioned, once I asked him the same question, outside schools you have, especially in the 10th class, 12th class, the kind of academic rigmarole that they go through. You'll have 6 hours of school and after that probably 8 hours of tuitions.
Mm-hmm.
But our students generally study like 2 hours, dedicated is like 2 hours of study hours, and someone will squeeze in that hectic schedule that you have, you'll probably squeeze in another 1 hour somewhere, 15 minutes, another half an hour somewhere before lunch, after lunch, save some time here and there. But you have such amazing results, and he mentioned this is the fact, the level of concentration, the focus that happens, because your mind is not very distracted with many other things.
And I remember meeting my friends after 12th standard, my friends from Sandhya School.
Yes.
So that's, as I told you, it's like one of the finest schools. But when I met them, it was over an India-Pak match. We had decided to go and meet.
Okay, during a vacation.
During a vacation. So they asked me, how did you find the physics paper, the board exams paper?
That was also a CBSE school.
Yes.
Okay.
So I said, it was pretty easy. And they said, are you kidding us? I mean, what do you mean it's pretty easy? It was like the toughest paper to crack. So that is the kind of difference that we have. And the kind of marks also our students get, definitely because of Swami's grace. And more than that, I think the confidence that they all have.
Yes.
The confidence that we all get by studying here.
Yes.
And knowing that, there is one person to lean back on.
Correct. That is the self-confidence.
Yes, that is the self-confidence.
Yes, capital S. Mm. Mm.
So, and in 12th standard also, coming back to, what were the special memories in school.
Mm.
In 12th standard itself, we got chance to put up, I think, 5 to 6 programs in Mandir and Rantaswami.
Wow.
Excluding the gratitude program and all that.
Oh, the standard, sort of statutory programs.
So, it was a beautiful time we all had, life was centered around Swami.
Yes.
And he used to interact a lot with all of us.
And that is really amazing in the sense that when you came on day one itself, you were somehow, the love for Swami had begun, right from day one.
Yeah, and I think it had begun when I knew that, prayers work. There is something called prayer, first of all. It works. He listens to it.
That happened by the time you joined school, you almost were confirmed
because,
in that.
Yes, because I had lost all hopes. I knew that I would have to go back, without a face to my friends. At that point in time, that was more important.
Hmm.
More than anything else, what do I...
I know, peer pressure is
very high at that age.
At that age, yes. The very fact that you found your name in the selected list for interviews, the very fact that you cleared the written test itself was a sort of confirmation that there is something working. And that only got perhaps more and more reinforced as the days went along. Fantastic. How was Vrindavan? Now we're already completely into the system. Now perhaps it's time to make the most of the system.
Yeah.
So when did you start singing?
It was in my first year in Vrindavan.
In Vrindavan. Okay, so 12. So 2 years of enough of bhajans you heard as a school student. But sports began right after. Music began a little later.
A little later.
Okay.
So that is the kind of introduction even I got in Vrindavan. As in some of my teachers from school, they went and told that, you know, this guy has good potential in singing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'd heard me sing in the assembly prayer and all that. And the other teachers, they went and told them that this guy is a good sportsman. So the Brindavan teacher were like kind of confused. Are you Pratim Banerjee the sportsman or are you Pratim Banerjee the singer? So I said, I am the sportsman trying to be a singer. So like, okay, fine.
But you didn't have any training, right? Formal training in music. It was just there.
Just there. And the 2 years I had imbibed a lot of Prashanti style of singing,
yes.
As you say that.
Yes.
The turnings of the songs.
Yeah.
And,
the way the bhajan flows, you're getting used to the lyrics and the tune.
And I somehow took to it. It sounded very nice with some of our best singers singing it.
Yes.
Very soothing to the ears.
Yes.
And maybe also to the soul, I would say.
Yes.
Which kind of drew me more to it. That year, quite a few interesting things happened in Vrindavan also. Swami left on 1st June in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the same evening he came back to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He left in the morning
he left
and
in
came
the morning.
Back to Vrindavan.
Came back, yeah.
This is 2005.
2005.
So what is the story?
I mean, I'm not sure what exactly it was.
Okay.
Because
it was a surprise.
It was a surprise. And because there was a Upanayanam planned.
Okay.
A mass Upanayanam ceremony. So we all had expected that Swami would stay back at least till then. But then when he left on 1st June, people, they were like all sulking, sitting in Vrindavan. All the teachers also, whomever we spoke to, they were saying we expected at least till that day Swami would stay. I think that was, I'm not sure of the date. But then when Swami came back in the evening, you should have seen the joy on every face there. Because, you know, that's the time when we all feel ki, this is our right to have Swami in Vrindavan,
yes,
for those many days. How can,
yes,
he just go off like that?
Yes. Because you just joined the campus and you want to have Swami in the campus for some time.
And Swami came back. That was when I was shortlisted along with another friend of mine for singing in Mandir. And we started singing just a day after the Upanayanam ceremony.
Okay.
So that's how I got introduced into bhajan group. And Swami sounded very impressed at that point in time. One of my teachers telling me, I remember I was singing Dhimita Dhimita Dhim.
Okay.
And it goes up to a crescendo.
Yes.
Nache Bolana.
Yes.
So that part, I of course had my eyes closed and I was singing because, you know, at times I used to get distracted by some movement of Swami's. I used to prefer closing my eyes and singing. So, one of my teachers, after the bhajan got over, he told, you know, today Swami looked so impressed that, you know, such a small boy, he can also sing that high.
Okay.
So, I was like very happy that Swami is at least, he's, you know, in some way acknowledging.
Wow. And Vrindavan being Vrindavan, the good thing is, because it is only the undergraduate program there, 3 years, so there are no postgraduates,
mm-hmm,
there,
mm-hmm,
so you have more opportunities.
More opportunities.
With Bhagwan.
I mean, Vrindavan was a really lovely experience. Actually, in the first year itself, during sports meet, there was planned an event, paramotors.
Okay.
The motored paraglider event.
Yes.
So, I wasn't even allowed to, you know, go for the selection procedure because I was part of the drama group. Initially, Vrindavan had planned not to have the drama, annual sports drama. But later on, Swami had called the Prashanti Nilayam students and told them that, you know, every year Vrindavan campus puts up such wonderful dramas, why don't you all also do a drama?
Oh my God.
So that was like, you know, shooting two birds with one arrow. So he made Prashanti Nilayam boys prepare for a drama, and at the same time, we in Vrindavan got a indication that Swami wants a drama.
I think it was those years when this drama became an integral part of the
sports and cultural meet.
Otherwise, drama was the main thing during the convocation. Now, sports meet drama became an integral part.
I was part of the drama group. As a result, I was not, you know, auditioned for this paragliding event. So, I felt really bad that Swami, I mean, I'm capable. I know that if I give it a shot, I may qualify. Then why was I not even allowed to, you know, audition for that? So, I remember one of my senior brothers, he was in the third year that year, the final year. And I was in the first year. He happened to come after this first training session to the room. And I asked him, so brother, how was it? You know, he added his all own mirch masala and he told him, very nice and this, that. And I remember looking at Swami's photo in my room. We all have an altar there.
Yes.
So, looked at his photo and said, Swami, I also wanted to do this only for you. Why did I not get the chance? And you won't believe, after about a week's time, we got news from Parthi, saying that this year Swami has told there should be no stunt items. So motorcycle stunts, paramotors and everything automatically got cancelled. And then I started wondering, did my prayers work in a reverse manner? I said, Swami, I wanted to do it, not that they should not do it.
Yes.
But everything happens for a reason, and the same event was proposed for next year's sports meet as well.
Okay.
And that's when they told that we have 7 boys from last year's team, so they would stay intact. We would take a couple of more students from the junior classes, you know, second year and first year, so that they get to learn something new. And that year's bike stunts were there. So my classmates and all volunteered for that, and they said, "Ki Pratim, why are you wasting your time going for paramotors? Anyways, you won't get a chance to fly in front of Swami." I said, "No, no, just let me give it a shot. I know by Swami's grace, I will finally get into the core team." And then, of course, I am not the tallest of the persons, so there were some apprehensions in even everybody's mind that whether this guy would be able to do it. I barely managed to, you know, cross, and you know, I was 5'6". That was the minimum height required for this event. Just managed. And finally, you know, due to hard work and due to constant prayer to Swami, Narasimhamurthy sir had told that, "See, if 8 of you have qualified, all 8 are equally qualified for, you know, this particular event. So now what would differentiate one from the other would be your intensity of prayers."
Who will do in front of Swami?
Yes, who will do in front of Swami. So Swami would eventually, you know, through the scheme of things,
yes,
pick up a few who are best suitable for this particular job. So just pray hard that you feature in that particular list. So I used to pray, even in the bathroom while taking a bath, pray that, "Swami, I'm doing this for you, Swami, please, having got me this far, don't leave me now, I want to do it for you."
Come to think of it, I don't know, in which other university will you have youngsters, you know, you have a competition for prayer.
Yes, and that's where, you know, the word again is focus. When you do something, with what intensity you do it, a lot of things are done as, you know, regular activities and stuff, but sports meet, we all are very focused, and that's the reason behind the success of every sports meet, because it's an dedication, it's a dedication offered to Swami, an offering to Swami. So that's why, I mean, even now when people ask, how could anyone do such a thing, you know, it's nearly impossible, only professionals can do it. How do we pick it up so fast? How do our students, you know, do such a good job of it at such a short notice? It's because we want to do it for Swami.
So strength comes, everything happens only because of that reason.
Because of that.
Fear just vanishes.
And honestly, I'm a person who was kind of scared of heights.
Mm-hmm.
During the duration of that particular event, I was not scared of heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it. Why I'm saying this is because my grandmom stays at the 10th floor of an apartment in Calcutta. And when I look down, I do get jitters, you know, my feet kind of shivers. But for paramotors, it never happened.
Sai Ram, and welcome back. You just heard part one of this fleeting moments interview with Sai alumnus, Mr. Pratim Banerjee. I will bring you part two of this conversation right here on Morning Glory next week. Please send us your feedback by email at listener@radiosai.org. Our email ID remains listener@radiosai.org. It is now time for me to offer Morning Glory at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. Before I hand you over to Brother Raghu, may I ask you to please reflect on this affirmation from I do not know where. I just found it alongside a beautiful picture of God Buddha, and it says, "If you think positively, sound becomes music, movement becomes dance, smile becomes laughter, mind becomes meditation, and life becomes a celebration." With that, I ask you to please be well, stay inspired, and do whatever it takes to be positive. Just be happy, will you please? Why am I being so insistent? Well, don't forget what Dr. Deepak Anand shared with us, Baba's mantra to a student of Lavu, Navu, and Nuvu. Happiness is nothing but union with God, says Baba, and isn't that reason enough for all of us to be happy? See you next Thursday on Morning Glory right here at 9:40 a.m. Till we meet, Jai Sai Ram.